Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And today we're taking you back over 25 years to something that's been described as the biggest marketing blunder of the century. Coca-Cola's decision to change the secret formula of its drink. Alan Johnston reports.
It's early in the summer of 1985, and it looks like the Coca-Cola company is on top of the world. Its famous fizzy drink is a vast global marketing success story. This sugary drink had become the single most widely distributed commercial product on Earth and the world's best-known brand name. But by the mid-80s, behind the scenes, the company had reason to be worried.
By the early 80s, Coca-Cola had been losing market share to Pepsi for 20 years.
Mark Pendergrast is a native of Atlanta, Georgia, the city that's home to Coke's global headquarters. Mark's father made display rags for Coca-Cola, and the company and its product were a permanent presence in his childhood. Much later, he spent years researching and writing his book called For God, Country and Coca-Cola. He's well placed to know why the firm's bosses were so concerned back in 1985.
They had tried pretty much everything that they could think of. Brilliant marketing, almost universal distribution. You also have to realize the CEO was a Cuban immigrant named Roberto Gazueta, who was very aggressive and who had declared that there was no sacred cow in the company, that he was willing to fiddle with any formula in order to dominate Pepsi. And there under his nose was a formula which was sacred and not to be touched, but which was losing gradually to Pepsi. For a company with the incredible pride and history of Coca-Cola, that was just intolerable. So Gazueta authorized secretly for them to begin playing with the formula, and they came up with one that was much more similar to Pepsi. It was sweeter, didn't have as much fizz or bite to it, and that did beat Pepsi in blind taste tests.
The new Coke, as it was called, hit the streets with all the hype and hoopla that you might expect. The first cans of this very American drink were given symbolically to workers who were renovating the Statue of Liberty. And along with the event in New York, down in Atlanta, there were giant US flags, marching bands, and majorettes went striding through the city. And at a press conference, Coke's executives came to explain what they were doing and why.
We discovered something else, a new cola formula, a product which our flavor scientists quickly realized was highly preferred by in-house expert taste panels over Coca-Cola itself and, of course, over its primary competition.
The whole story is going to be when that consumer in Atlanta and any place around the world puts their lips to this product, they're just flat going to enjoy it.
Coke's great rival, Pepsi, immediately declared victory as the world and the BBC looked on.
So thrilled are Pepsi by Coke's decision to change that in the United States they're running a special advertisement. It reads, "After 87 years of going at it eyeball to eyeball, the other guy just blinked." Coke, on the other hand, are still claiming that they're the real thing.
But to many loyal Coke drinkers, the new flavour just wasn't the real thing. The old Coke that they'd grown up with had suddenly been replaced with something different, and they were outraged. Their anger mounted until eventually the company was taking 8,000 calls a day from angry customers. A Coke fanatic in Seattle launched Old Cola Drinkers of America, an association that drew much attention as it campaigned against the new stuff. Comedians on television and columnists in the newspapers mocked and savaged the decision to switch. And the Cuban leader, Fidel Castro, suggested that the turmoil engulfing this iconic American product was symptomatic of a wider national malaise. But for Coke, perhaps the low point came when sports fans at the Houston Astrodome jeered its adverts on the stadium's giant screen.
The news during the spring and summer of 1985 was dominated by a collective national nervous breakdown over the change of the formula for a drink that is 99% sugar water. I mean, how important is this? It's not. And yet, it was.
How do you account for that kind of mentality? What was going on here?
Coca-Cola had become embedded in the American consciousness. So, for better or worse, Coca-Cola had become a part of the American psyche and a symbol of the American way of life. Many people had their earliest memories, their first loves, their first dates associated with drinking Coca-Cola. Many parts of traditional life were being assaulted by the middle of the 1980s. And here was something that people thought was fundamental and firm and wasn't going to change, and it was changing, and they were appalled.
And eventually, Coke climbed down. How did it go about making that U-turn?
It was hard, because they really had been sure that this was a good move, and they expected a little bit of resistance, but they had a superior drink, and they expected that in the long run, it would do well. And they thought, you know, the media uproar over it, you know, would go away. But it did not go away. And you had protesters who were leading protests every day and getting a lot of coverage. People were pouring New Coke very publicly down sewer drains. It was a disaster. And it went on and on and on. So finally, in July, the company capitulated. They didn't say they were taking away New Coke. They weren't. But they brought back the old formula. What could they call it, though? They couldn't call it Coca-Cola, so they called it Coca-Cola Classic.
The U-turn was greeted as huge news. The ABC television network broke into its scheduled broadcasting to report the decision, and it made the front pages of almost every American newspaper. Speaking on the floor of the U.S. Senate, a congressman actually described the return of Old Coke as a meaningful moment in the nation's history.
But what's important is what the public did and what the market did. And what happened was Coca-Cola had had a place in America's heart all along, but not necessarily in its refrigerator. Now, with the reminder of what this drink meant to them, the market share for Coca-Cola began to go up, and it began to dominate Pepsi. And eventually, New Coke dwindled away to nothing. Coca-Cola Classic became, more than ever, the leading soft drink in America, so much so that many people thought that the whole thing had been a marketing ruse, that Coca-Cola had intended this whole thing in the first place, that it was a brilliant marketing hoax. And I can tell you for absolutely certain that that is not true. They screwed up, but it all turned out for the best for them.
But you can understand the conspiracy theorists, can't you? They're seeing this extraordinarily savvy company getting it so badly wrong and yet so magically coming out on the right side of this. You can understand, as I say, the skepticism.
I do understand it, and Americans love conspiracy theories. So, of course, they were going to say that, but it's not true.
Witness was written and presented by Alan Johnston. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.